I'm Andrei Homescu, and I will be presenting our security work on Subversive Z. And this was joint work between Immunant, our security startup, and UCI, and QUD, and RUB, three universities and a startup. And I am going to talk about Subversive Z, which is a new novel kind of control flow attack. But first, I will... Sorry about that. There's a problem with PowerPoint. Okay. So Subversive Z is a new kind of control flow attack, but first let's see how we got to it. So in the past few years, there's been a lot of interesting research on control flow hijacking attacks of various flavors, starting with return-oriented programming and with later flavors. And each one of these uses... Yes?
Chris is getting a lot of screaming.
Okay.
Tailing forward.
Okay, so control flow hijacking attacks are have become increasingly popular in the recent years, along with corresponding defenses, including defenses such as stack canaries and shadow stacks against return-oriented programming, and then control flow integrity against other kinds of control flow hijacking attacks. And that still leaves potential other kinds of control flow hijacks, which haven't really been studied. And I'm going to talk about one new kind of attack against the dynamic message dispatch mechanism in Objective-C, which hasn't really been studied, and there's also no corresponding defense until now. So first, a little bit of background and catch up on what control flow hijack attacks exactly are. So let's say we have a variable A, and this is a very simple illustration and a simplified example. So let's say we have a variable A that contains a function pointer to a function foo, and some code in our program that loads that address from the variable A, and then does a go-to to that address loaded from memory. So now let's say a malicious attacker finds a way of tampering with that variable A, and instead of the pointer to foo, the attacker overwrites foo with, let's say, the address of the system call, so that the attacker wants to start a shell. So then, if the attacker manages to do this, when the program continues normally, it's going to load the address of the shell of the system call from memory and then execute it. So this is essentially the idea behind control flow hijacking attacks. So going back to the previous slide where I said there were uncovered mechanisms that can be abused for Objective-C dispatch, we looked at Objective-C, which is basically a superset of C. So any C program is also an Objective-C program. And on top of that, we also have object-oriented features, Smalltalk style, on top of C language. Much like C++, and I'll get back to that later. And the reason Objective-C is interesting is because it's very popular right now because of Apple, who uses it on all of their devices. So many, many apps for Apple devices use Objective-C. So this was an interesting target for us. So let's see, I mentioned it's basically Objective-C is C with classes, much like C++, but let's see what the differences are. So in C++, when we call a method in an object, we do dispatch by calling a method, and the actual implementation of the method that gets called, there's basically every class has a fixed list of methods that can be called. This is established during compile time, and the class structure is fixed. Whereas in Objective-C, the the dispatch mechanism works by sending a message to an object, and then whether or not an object can receive a message and how it handles that is completely resolved at runtime. And this has huge implications for security. And to show kind of one of the features and one of the ways in which this manifests, I'll give an example of how easy it is in Objective-C to modify a class. So let's say we have an object of class A. We allocate and initialize the object of A, and then we decide, okay, let's add a message or a method foo to that object. So basically, we call the class add method function from the Objective-C runtime. We add the foo method with the implementation, and then we dispatch a foo message to that object. And that's just going to go to the foo imp method defined on top, and we can do all of this at runtime. The compiler is, well, the compiler could do some analysis to figure this out, but it would be pretty difficult. And most of this, all of this happens at runtime. So this has implications for the implementation of the runtime and for how we actually do dispatch in practice. And as we can see here, this is the message dispatch algorithm. And as we can see here, it's pretty complicated. It has many steps, and the bulk of it is on every message dispatch, the runtime walks through the entire class hierarchy for an object and tries to determine which function actually receives a message. And to optimize this, the Apple runtime implements a fast path which uses caching to accelerate this process. And if the caching fails, it goes into the original slow path, which can be very, very slow. And this is pretty critical for performance. And in addition to that, this also uses a lot of in-memory metadata, where every object points to its class structure, which contains a variety of fields describing what goes in that class, and a pointer to the cache, a pointer to a method list, and a variety of very interesting function pointers. And what happens is these are all in memory. These are all mutable. So an attacker, a malicious attacker, can just go in, modify them, write anything the attacker wants on top of these, and pretty much that's the basis of our attack. So before I actually go into the details of the attack, I'm going to talk a little bit about what the attacker can and cannot do. So we assume that the attacker can read or write any location in memory, any value, but there's no other control flow hijacking. So we're using these two primitives, and we're trying to reach a control flow hijacking attack on top of the Objective-C data structures. So we built our attack, and we used as a starting point this previous attack called counterfeit object-oriented programming, which reuses, reuses or builds fake C++ objects on top of the existing read-only C++ structures. And this was published last year, but unlike the C++ attack where some of the class structures are read-only and we can't touch them, in our attack, which we call Subversive-C, we can pretty much tamper with everything. We can rewrite all of this. We can add fake objects, we can add fake classes, and then we can rewrite function pointers, which they're actually called impl pointers in the code. And if we start rewriting the implementation pointers, we can point them to malicious code, which we call gadgets, and get the program to do anything we want. So we can go through implementation pointers and replace them one by one. So where do we want to go with this and what we have? With what I already talked about, we have the ability to build fake Objective-C objects in memory, either new ones or replace existing ones. From that, we can get a control flow hijacking attack. And just like before, we want to call the system call that gives us a shell. So that's our goal. And that may sound simple at first, but in practice, it's a little bit more convoluted, because we have to do several preparation steps. One is we have to find system in memory. We have to get the function pointer for that. Then we have to set up its arguments on the stack or in registers. And then third, we have to actually compute it, compute the address, and then invoke system indirectly through a function pointer. And we actually perform these steps by implementing them in a form of pseudo programming language where the instructions are actually the gadgets I mentioned earlier. And we essentially only have six kinds of gadgets, and that's all we need, and we implement the previous steps on top of these gadgets. Essentially, we need a memory read, write, addition, a function invocation, and the main loop gadget, which I'll talk about briefly, because that one's actually pretty interesting. So I'll actually leave the details of most of these gadgets for the paper. How these are implemented and what exactly they do, it's all on the paper. So I think the interesting gadget here is the main loop gadget, which is basically its purpose is we were only allowed to call one gadget, but we actually have a series of maybe complicated steps to perform, all of them represented by gadgets. So we want one gadget that is able to call multiple other gadgets. So we found a function that does exactly this, which is the dialloc function in a tree node class, the NS text replacement node. And what it does is it looks at the self object at a given object of that class, reads the children field, and then iterates through all of the children up to 28 of them, and then it dispatches the release message on each of those children. And since we control both the release field and the message and the children field, basically we can just have this call up to 28 other gadgets iteratively. And we can do this recursively, and we can just call an arbitrary number of gadgets. So now that we have this, we have all of this implemented, we found all of the gadgets we needed in the AppKit framework, which is used on macOS for a multitude of apps. We built a proof of concept vulnerable program, and we successfully attacked and exploited that program. We successfully launched a shell in our proof of concept. And why this is interesting is AppKit, we only used gadgets from the AppKit framework, and AppKit is used by very many macOS programs, including all of the, well, if not all of them, most of the ones installed by default on macOS. So if attackers would find, let's say, an arbitrary read or arbitrary write vulnerability in one of these programs, they would be vulnerable to our attack. And in addition to showing that this attack works, we also proposed a complementary defense, so we don't leave that gap unfilled. So we propose an effective defense against this attack called object layout integrity, where basically we went in and for every one of these sensitive data structures that could be modified, for practical reasons, we couldn't actually make them read-only, unfortunately, because that would have been either would have broken existing software or been much too slow. So instead, we go with the hashing and the HMAC approach, and we add an HMAC to each of these sensitive structures. And the default approach we took was to just pick a good, secure HMAC function and apply it to everything. And that's what we did. And we took the HMAC MD5 function and added it to every field, and it gets checked on every slow path lookup in the previous algorithm, and it relies on having a secret key K, which I'll get back to that later. And the problem with this approach is this is good for the slow path, but it's not fast enough to secure the cache. So for the cache, we do something else where we have a much faster but potentially less secure arithmetic-based HMAC. And for every cache entry, we apply it, and then we store the our computer HMAC in that cache entry. And both of these HMAC functions rely on having a secret key that we know, the runtime knows, but the attacker doesn't know and has no way of reading the secret key. And the way we do that is using this recent technique called execute-only memory, where we are able to allocate memory pages, write to them, write secret information to those pages, and then protect those pages in such a way that that information can only be read via execution. It cannot be directly read or written, but you can actually call a function and retrieve the contents of that memory. And there are actually multiple ways to implement this. There's been recent work on various ways to implement this. And this is what we use to secure our keys, and as long as the attacker does not have any way of executing the secret execute-only store, the attacker cannot get our keys. So we implemented this, the defense, and we implemented it as part of the open source Objective-C runtime from Apple, and we were able to add all of our HMAC functions to that code, compile it, and then drop it into a working Mac OS X system. And then we ran a series of both micro benchmarks and real-world apps to test the performance of our defense. And we can see here the overhead of micro benchmarks is actually somewhat significant. It goes up to over 100%, but this is like the absolute upper bound and worst case of benchmarks. But we can see by looking at the real-world benchmarks that the real-world performance hit is not as high. On average, we get 1.5% for things like encoding some media files with iTunes or opening a PDF file with pages. So in practice, the overhead is not going to be that high. So to conclude, we showed a control flow hijacking attack on the Objective-C message dispatch mechanism that is unique to Objective-C. And then we also proposed a specific defense to counteract this attack with a very low overhead of 1.5% on real-world applications. And that is pretty much where I'm going to conclude my talk, just by adding in a small final plug, which is other related software security work was just that we wrote as part of our collaboration that also produced this work. The other work was accepted into the Tor browser. And that is it. Thank you.